This episode is supported by Manscaped. Manscaped have kindly agreed to continue sponsoring the podcast. You can use our promo code GTM to receive 20% off all products and free worldwide shipping. If you've not heard of Manscaped before, they're now the leading company in male grooming. Their products range from face razors to nose trimmers and their famous Lawnmower 3.0, which is a product specifically designed for in and around your nether regions, so you no longer have to worry about snagging the bag. As a listener of Go In The Match, you get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with our promo code GTM. Head over to www.manscaped.com to have a look at all their range of products to grab yourself an absolute bargain.
Welcome back to the Go In The Match podcast. Today I'm joined by Jordy Holden. Jordy is a match going red and part of the Spying Cop, who do an incredible job in getting banners and flags on the cop at Anfield. Jordy, thanks for giving you time today, mate, and coming on the podcast.
Good to see you, mate. Looking forward to it.
Okay, so I want you to take us back to your childhood, growing up in Red. Where were you born and how did your love for Liverpool Football Club begin?
I was born in the Women's Hospital in Liverpool, which is just on the cusp of town, in 2001, the treble year. I was actually born at half-time when we were playing Porto.
Oh, were you?
And Michael Owen scored. My granddad was at the match and my dad had it on the radio in the hospital. Michael Owen scored, so they nearly called me Michael or Owen, which luckily they didn't. So what happened with him after it? But I've lived in the south end of the city all my life, about 15 minutes away from the ground. And being born into a Red family, both granddads have been Red. Went to Rome in 77 into Milan, St Etienne.
No other choice, then. I did notice, like, on your Twitter and stuff, that like you are born into a proper Red family, like, aren't you?
Do you
look back at that now, thinking like how happy you are for that? Because I think some people just look at it now and think, well, I was always going to be a Red, but like some of the journeys, obviously, we've been able to go on and stuff. Do you sort of look back at that now and think like, you know, thank God you've put me in that position?
Yeah, my granddad said he got took to Goodison one week and Anfield the next, and both granddads chose Liverpool when we were in the second division.
Yeah.
When Shankly took over, and Everton were the top dogs of the city at the time. But it was, I thanked them every day. Luckily now.
So can you remember anything from like the first match you went to? Any sort of like the first match, the experience you had going to Anfield for the first time?
I can't remember the experience of like going in the pubs, etc. But my first match was in 2004.
Right.
And we played Strum Grass in the Champions League the year we won it in Istanbul.
Yeah.
We played them in the group stage in August of 2004. And we got beat 1-0 at Anfield by Strum Grass, and we went on to win it. So, went there with my dad for that game. That was my first ever game.
And then, like, obviously, I know you've definitely done the miles on the aways as well, obviously, growing up now. Have you got any sort of, like, away grounds that you've particularly enjoyed going to over the years?
The best away ground I've been to is, it's actually knocked down now, it's the bowling ground, West Ham's.
Oh, yeah.
We went to, when on the 2014 title charge, Gerrard scored 2 pens late on in April. So it's a very good memory of the ground. That was the only game I went to there. But that was probably the best ground I've been to. But now, I think, I don't know why I get called a weirdo by the lads I go with. But Arsenal's my favourite one. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But it's just like where it is in London. The far ones are the best, I think. So where it is in London, it's the away end on the cusp of the ground, it's boss.
Do you reckon, like, you touched on like the bowling there? Do you reckon, like, going on all these aways, and it's ironically, you obviously talk about the Emirates there. Do you think, like, those sort of nostalgic grounds, like the bowling, obviously, you haven't got that anymore? And you could argue that, obviously, Goodison's probably that sort of ground now, and that's not going to be there that much longer. From like your experience on going the aways, do you think that's going to be something the Premier League's maybe going to miss from like a match day experience, those sort of maybe like a hostile, nostalgic ground, maybe?
Yeah, not just the Premier League. Well, if you'd ask West Ham fans, they move back in a heartbeat, wouldn't they? And so would Arsenal. So would Tottenham. And in 5 years, so with Everton, I think so. It's one of the reasons that I'd personally never want to move away from Anfield, so that'll be one of the most nostalgic grounds in the next 5 years, won't it, in the Premier League.
I literally couldn't agree more. I think that's like one of the best decisions we ever made. It's like not taking up on Hicks and Gillette's decision of potentially moving and then exactly, obviously staying put where we were. So, well, obviously, touching on the aways there, doing the European aways compared to the domestic aways, like how would you compare them? Because I've always felt personally that sort of relationship Liverpool have with the European Cup and like the history of just going to like some mad places and just creating these stories that even we've been able to do over the last couple of years. Do you feel there's like a different, I've always felt personally, like there's a difference doing the domestic to the Europeans?
Yeah, definitely. The European away is obviously much better, aren't they? Because you're going to a foreign place where you've, most of the time where you've never been.
Mm.
That's why the Europa League's great as well, isn't it? Because you go to different places. But yeah, the European away's, it's weird because my favourite European away, we got beat 3-0 by Barcelona, but because of the trip you had around the game, it was just great. But the best one in total is Bayern Munich, because with the game, you know, you go into one of the big boys and beating them in their own backyard.
Yeah, definitely. And like I noticed as well that you did Roma in 2018 as well, and obviously people that listen to this podcast know that I bang on about that all the time, that it's probably the best experience of my life outside my son being born. And something on that I want to get your thoughts on was that trip in particular, because for me, like, there was a special sense about that game in terms of it just felt like a throwback to the 80s in terms of like a hostile atmosphere. And like, you know, obviously the small matter of us getting to a Champions League final as well, but I always feel like that game maybe doesn't get spoken about enough. Maybe because of what happened in Kiev. I just wanted to get what your thoughts and your experience in Roma was as well.
Yeah, as you say, it was probably that in Belgrade, probably the most hostile grounds I've ever been to.
Yeah.
But, as you mentioned Kiev there, it'd be remembered much better if we went to the final and won, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like everything, like Dortmund, if we went to that final and won. But, yeah, the coaches to the ground in Rome, it was just mad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just the shuttle buses the club put on to get the fans to the square, to the Olympico, were just mad, and they made them even more angry. You could see them all on the motorbikes going to the ground, putting the finger up to you because you'd stopped all the traffic, all the away fans going through to the ground. So,
I always remember someone had a Lazio flag in our end.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a Lazio cap on it, which looking back wasn't a good idea. Like, but the 30 minutes after the full time whistle will stay with you forever, won't they? Because it was just when the players come back out as well, when you thought they'd gone down, it was just take it to the grave.
I remember the full time whistle going, and I remember just seeing Van Dijk just drop into his knees, and literally I just felt like I could have cried. Like at that moment in time, I could have just welled up and cried. And then the players and like. I was remember Trent coming back out with Woodburn.
The two youngsters at the front.
Yeah, it was mad that, wasn't it? And I just feel like that one maybe doesn't get spoken about enough, but maybe that's because obviously we didn't win in Kiev. But you spoke about Kiev there. And a lot of people, I know you went to Kiev and obviously you went to Madrid for the final as well. How did them two compare for you? Because a lot of people say that the actual trip for Kiev was better. Then maybe what Madrid was obviously brilliant because you won the European Cup. But do you think maybe Kiev was a better experience?
And if you ask the majority of Liverpool fans, I think that's the resounding vote, isn't it? That just because it was a different place, and I think a lot more Liverpool fans went to Madrid than making the journey over to Kiev. So yeah, but for me, I just can't look past Madrid because we won it, and It depends, though, doesn't it? Because everyone has their own experiences where you stayed and what bars you went into. You know, one bar could be terrible and then the next bar could be bouncing and the best songs going. So, you know, Shevchenko Park will be hard to beat. I didn't go to the square in Madrid just because it was that rammed that rammed full of people in there. We stayed out the way a bit. But Shevchenko Park it's going to be hard to beat for the rest of a final.
So obviously you touched on Madrid there. I suppose a bit of a bog standard question, but obviously win the European Cup, number six. What was your sort of feelings after we won that? Because I went to Madrid, I wasn't lucky enough to get a ticket, but even just seeing us lifting the European Cup again after having such like a trophy drought, I suppose, for such a big club and us, what was your sort of feeling and elation after that final whistle?
Yeah, it was tiredness, really, because it was absolutely roasting and the ground had just emptied out of water and ale. So when we'd won it, you just sweating, and then the day he scored, it was just like, we've done it. And just standing there next to my dad and my dad's mate, who we've always been with, and just like, you know, we were at Baal in Kiev under Klopp, and then it's like, we finally done it.
Do you reckon, obviously, you touched on like being there with your dad and like your family and that. Do you think like that experience made it more special? Like, I've always touched on this podcast about, like, you can be sat somewhere in the ground, your own, and have an incredible experience and witness like an amazing night, a European night or whatever. But you know, when you're doing it with like your mates or your family, it just means more to like say you've seen it with them, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Especially for my dad as well, because he would have been in Istanbul with his mate, but then Istanbul on his own, and then Madrid with his son.
Yeah.
You know, that must be some feeling, that, mustn't it? So yeah, but with my granddad never goes abroad anymore to watch them. So but we are free, dead lucky, because we have free season tickets next to each other in the Kremlin.
Yeah.
With like a dead boss group of lads around us who, you know, we speak to all the time. But yeah, it's definitely better. Not better, but like, it's a great feeling doing it with your family.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you touched on your dad there. I've seen a picture you put on Twitter the other day about with you on his shoulders when we had the Hicks and Gillette protest. And obviously, being a bit of a young lad then, and do you sort of remember any of that? Any sort of, and I suppose with like the Super Cup stuff, like obviously the Super League, should I say, stuff's coming up recently with the protests and everything. Did any sort of memories flood back from that?
Yeah, a lot of memories. Seen a lot of pictures, and the video that you've seen popped up, obviously, didn't it?
Yeah.
it was a mad time. I was only 10 at the time, so a few things got lost in translation with me a bit. I was bouncing around with me Torres here, thinking I was Torres in my Spain kit on the marches, so playing FIFA on my PSP or on my dad's shoulders. So it was great, wasn't it? What the Spirit of Shankly done back then for the club set us up in a good position now. Yeah, the protest after the Sunderland game and outside the main stand in 2010 as well. Yeah. It just really got the message across, and it is similar to what's happened now with the Super League. But at the same time, this is like a civil war in football, isn't it? The Super League. And we're obviously, our owners have probably played a huge part in that, but that was a civil war just inside Liverpool, and even in the stands, I remember people fighting in the stands over the ownership and that. Just, we've got the club completely divided.
Yeah, and people don't realise those sort of things, like, you know, that are, you know, maybe not match going fans, you know, like sort of our international fan base. People don't realise those sort of things.
Yeah.
We mentioned at the start of the pod that you're part of the Spine Cop group as well, and for people that are listening that maybe aren't aware of that, you know, these lads organise the flags and the banners on the cop on match days, and they obviously have been doing it throughout COVID too. It's actually something that I've touched on quite a lot in the previous Liverpool episodes that I've done on the podcast. I've talked about how maybe my match day, from my personal point of view, has improved over the last like 5 to 7 years. And I think a lot of that has got to do with the effort that you lads do, and in terms of helping the atmosphere and things such as Boss Night too. And I just wanted to understand how you got involved into the Spine Cop and your thoughts around how that's maybe improved a lot of match-going fans' experience.
I honestly don't know how I got involved, to be honest with you. I didn't ask to be involved, and they didn't ask me to be involved. It was just natural, which is that was the best thing about it, because it's just a load of like-minded lads like myself doing it, who all anyone wants in it is the best outcome for Liverpool supporters, not the club, but the supporters, in the way the supporters want the club to be shaped and seen from the outside. So it started in 2013. Spine Cop, I wasn't a part of it then, and but it went from a few ideas on banners and that being portrayed on field to like basically riding the crest of a title charge where the coaches were going every week. They were turning up at Melwood, putting flags over it, and then the FDI, it just grew bigger and bigger, didn't it? But you say about the match going experience, definitely for the younger generation, it's improved the match going. It gives people a routine to do on match day and become a bit more involved. Whereas at other grounds, you'll see the younger generation just be cast aside, really. But this has given a younger generation a chance of being involved and have their say.
And do you sort of feel like there's a lot of responsibility on you lads as well to keep that tradition going and sort of be that voice of our fans? Because I know a lot of people are really proud of Spine Cop being the voice of us.
Yeah, I don't really feel any responsibility personally, like, because and I don't think any of the lads do, really, because we're lucky at Liverpool, for me, to have such a good fan representation in Spine Cop, in Spirit of Shankly, even in like the disabled supporters group, who like they always voice their opinion, and it's always from the core of the club who they've been going for years and years, do you know what I mean? So yeah, don't really feel any responsibility in what we do. It's all just natural, and just as we say, we just want to speak and portray the views of Liverpool fans. Through the banners, really.
And obviously, like, very recently we've had that all the farce around the Super League, and something obviously the Spire and Cop decided to do is take the flags and the banners off the cop to show the ownership that the fans obviously weren't behind it, which for me was the correct move. And like, I massively applaud everyone involved for doing that. Just wanted to know though, maybe, do you think that was quite a difficult decision for the group to make? Because obviously, you don't want the players to feel like we weren't behind them. But also, you've got to make sure that our voices were heard in a time where they can't be because we're not in the ground.
Exactly, yeah. You've nailed it on the head there, that we're not in the ground. So there's limited things you can do to portray your views. When such a big thing's going on, you can imagine what would have been happening if we were in the ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd have to taking the flags off the cop. It was the right decision, and because the flags resemble what Liverpool is all about, and the Super League resemble what Liverpool isn't about at all. So, yeah, the message was we've always been there for them, and now they have to be there for us, and they were, because especially Henderson, and yeah, it was a bit. I think Klopp got lost a bit in translation before the Leeds game. By saying, I think he just said it in the heat of the moment, and he'd been told one thing and hadn't put the jigsaw together yet. Yeah. And but since he said that he's happy that the flags have been left back on, and he regrets the saying that. So, but yeah, the flags for me, they give us that little bit of uniqueness where other teams haven't had when you're looking at the ground, because other teams have just put the same old quotes and left the seats empty, whereas if you look at the cop, it's still the same.
And obviously, just touching on, obviously we're not in the ground still because of COVID and all the farce around that. You were one of the lucky few as well that got into the ground around the December period last year, and when we could have a couple of thousand in the ground, and had Gibbo from the Anfield Rap on not so long ago to talk about his experience with that. So obviously he said there that it was odd, but it was great to be back. Just wanted to get your thoughts on what that experience was like. Was it weird? Was it just, or were you just glad to be back in there?
Yeah, it was a surreal experience. It was good. It was great. Don't get me wrong. Very, very lucky to be to 2,000 people watching it. But yeah, I got the West Brom game, which was a bit of an anti-climax after missing Wolves when we won 4-0, and we beat Tottenham in the last minute, and then I get West Brom and we draw 1-1. So it was a bit of an anti-climax in that way, but it was a very weird experience going in. It felt like there were more than 2,000 people in the ground, and I was quite low down by the goal in the cop, but it felt, just even walking in it, it felt like we'd already won the game in the ground. You know, I think John said it actually, that the ground felt like the last 10 minutes of the game when the ground was emptying out for the whole 90 minutes. So yeah, it was very surreal, but luckily I got in with my granddad as well, and we got the tickets next to each other, so what he wants to tell future generations anyway.
Oh yeah, definitely, mate. I mean, I was sitting here thinking what I would do to just be in there again. And I was at that Atletico game, obviously the last game where we had fans. I did remember leaving thinking, surely this can't be the last time we're in the ground. But it's just mad to think that we haven't been in there properly as a fan base ever since. And it probably, I suppose, we can't really come on the podcast now and talk about how Liverpool have currently played out this season. And, you know, there's so many injuries that we've had. And I do agree with, obviously, the injuries that we've had. But it's mad to think that at one point we were top of the league at one point, and we were so overachieving then. But then obviously we've massively underachieved. And I think there's been some games where we've been horrific this season. I suppose my question for you is, going into next season, what would you like to see maybe us do in the transfer market? Or do you think we need to change too much?
No, I think we need to get our own house in order first, to be honest with you, with the owners, etc., before we even start thinking about next season. But I think we've got 10,000 in for the Palace game, haven't we, next month? I think that's being given the green light. So hopefully that works out well for people going there. But next season, I don't know. Obviously, you want to be in the Championship. This season's been like one blow after the next, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Where you're in a boxing ring and someone's just punching you 24/7. And that all started with, obviously, through COVID, with missing out on being there for the league. Being there for the league, and then, you know, Van Dijk gets injured, and then, you know, the downfall of not being there, singing champions at Anfield, etc., and then the losses we've had at Anfield, and then, do you know what I mean? It's just like it's been one after the other, and it's just like I can't wait till this season's over, to be honest. And roll on August, I think you'll be the exact same for the full Anfield.
Yeah, 100%. The players are probably thinking the same. You touched on obviously being champions as well. Obviously, me and you are the same generation Liverpool fan. Haven't seen us only just put an end to that 30-year wait of winning the league. And obviously, we haven't won it in the way that we all envisaged, being in the ground. And I mean, for me, I always thought that would be, we would do it in a dramatic, typical Liverpool way, do it on the last day of the season or something like that. But to not even be in the ground was, you know, it's unthinkable. But just wanted to get your thoughts on how the feeling of that, winning the league, even though we weren't there, knowing that you've been a match going red, going to the arse end of nowhere and stupid seasons where we've bottled games, being 3-0 up, and then finally we win the league. Just wanted to get your thoughts on how that felt for you finally doing it.
Yeah. It was good. It was superb, wasn't it? Because at the end of the day, we won the league and on the hottest day of the year. So, but at the same time, in like around a year ago now, wasn't it? When it was all up in the air, what was going to happen, and people were throwing the null and void shout out, etc. But it was devastating not being there, obviously. But in the end, I've always said that I was looking back now, made up. We won it when we weren't playing, and it was Chelsea who beat City, and it was. Because it would have made it bittersweet if we beat Palace 4-0 and we won the league and the ground was empty at Anfield. It was great because Chelsea beating City gave us that night at Anfield, the let off, one let off, and then the next day at the Pierhead, that was another let off, and then the let off of all let offs was when we lifted it against Chelsea. So yeah, it was great, and it was great doing it with people who you never thought you'd see it with, like you were watching the Chelsea game in the house with like my mum. You were like, she doesn't go to the match, like, but she's put enough money into me going to the match when I was a kid, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And me granddad, one of my granddads who doesn't go to Anfield anymore. So it made it even more special in a way. But yeah, as you say, everyone had like that Aguero moment, wouldn't they, with all the lads who you sit by.
I suppose that's actually a really good way of looking at it. I've never really looked at it in that way, to be honest.
Yeah.
Did you go to Anfield, obviously, the night that we won it then?
Yeah, it was just out of instinct, really, that I was convinced that Chelsea were going to beat City the day. So I was on the AL early doors that day. So it was just completely out of instinct that I think everyone went to Anfield. It wasn't processed or anything, was it? There were people watching that game outside Anfield already. So, yeah, and then the Pierhead... was the Pierhead was great money. There was a good 10,000 people there. So
that looked like the party after the party, that one.
Yeah, yeah. The hangover.
So finally, the podcast is centered around going the match. So of every podcast we're doing, I want to end by asking, what are the top three favourite matches you've ever been to or seen?
Such a tough question, isn't it? you can't not go with Barcelona if you were there. Just you can't not go with that. It was unthinkable, really, wasn't it? To have not just be 3-0 down, because I remember coming out the new camp and it was surreal being 3-0 down, because we deserved to score a good three goals over there. So, and then to have Salah and Firmino injured. And then you've got a front three of Mane, Shaqiri and Origi. And then, yeah, I think one of the earlier generation had Saint Etienne, and then my dad and, you know, the lads who went through the 90s, they always say about Chelsea, but Barcelona's got to be on Field's greatest night, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I've said on this podcast multiple times, like I was lucky enough to go to Barcelona, but like going to Dortmund in 2016, like you always, and you probably know more than anybody else growing up, you hear all these stories. You just want one for yourself, though, don't you? You're always like, yeah, that's great, but I want one that I can tell my kids.
Yeah, the likes of Dortmund, etc. They're great, fantastic. Beating City in the Champions League, United in the Europa League, they're all great, but it's that one where you look back on in 50 years' time and you go, wow, like I was there at that game. Messi, Suarez, Coutinho, they were done in Anfield, and not just done, they were given a 3-0 head start and they were done 4-0. So,
what's your second one?
My second one, for what I stated earlier, it's got to be Bayern Munich away, just because it was the first time I'd been to one of the proper big European grounds and we'd won. You know, it was 0-0 going into the first leg, and it was the whole trip around it. Germany have it absolutely spot on, the footy over there, just the culture and everything. You just wandered into the Allianz, and there were Bayern Munich fans next to you, and you're going up the steps, and then you went one way and you went the other. It was exactly what you wanted, and then they're one of the biggest clubs in the world, and yeah, we battered them for 90 minutes and went through.
People always say about, obviously, German football. I didn't go to Bayern, but two of my close mates obviously went to it. And they say that the Allianz is, like, quite far away from, like, maybe what you'd expect. But the whole culture, they've got football spot on over there. And obviously, in a time where we're talking about the Super League and how the fans don't really matter, I suppose this is obviously a bit more of a question outside of your top three here, but do you think that maybe that 50 plus one rule's got to come in to the Premier League, maybe?
It's the dream, isn't it, to happen? Like, but do I think it ever will happen here? No. I just can't see it, to be honest. I just don't think it'll come into fruition here. But obviously it's a dream, everyone wants it. But I think Liverpool, the likes of Liverpool, the top six clubs here, I think they've got too much control and like basically too much money basically to filter down now.
Yeah, 100%. And your third and final one?
My third and final one, I'm going to go with the one I stated it. I'm not going to go with Madrid or anything like that, because I think it's a bit too obvious. But I didn't state it earlier, sorry. It was in Qatar when we beat Flamenco 1-0.
Oh, yeah.
For the World Club Cup, and yeah, it was the whole trip around it. Again, it was just a surreal experience, and playing someone who, you know, we've hardly ever played, and we might never not play them again. Flamenco, and their fans were unbelievable. Over just first time ever I've seen the Liverpool fans be outnumbered somewhere.
So
by Flamenco.
What was your route to the Qatar then? I can't imagine what the route was for that.
It was just direct on Qatar Airways.
Was it not expensive? Like,
well, yeah, it was. It wasn't as expensive as I thought it'd be, but it was a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But to do the 4 days over there and beat Monterrey and go to the fan park and see Qatar for what it was, and then to top it all off, actually win it by beating Flamengo, because you know that's what everyone had in mind before that everyone wanted to play the South American team in the final. I'm sure they wanted to play the European team. So, but yeah, it was the perfect outcome to the perfect trip, really. Though.
How did that feel like in terms of? I'm just trying to kind of put myself in your shoes for that, because did that feel like a proper European away? Did that feel like something you've probably not experienced before?
Yeah, it was something we never experienced. It was crazy because I walked into that Monterrey game, the semi-final, like, and honestly, the feeling I had was just like, this is just like a pre-season friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by half time, you were like, it was like any other game that you wanted Liverpool to win, and especially the final, the way the final went with all the VAR rubbish in it, etc. And then to beat them in extra time, and for me, you know, to score, it was just as good a let off as anywhere, really.
So I don't think there's any better way to finish the podcast than talking about becoming champions of the world, mate. So, just before I let you go, just a massive thank you for giving up your time and coming on. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Really enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed that episode and want to keep notified for future episodes, please make sure you subscribe, follow and share, and of course, leave us a 5-star rating. You can now follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, all at Go in the Match, to keep updated for future episodes and updates on the podcast.